I've lost everything to you. Say you wanna start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Maybe I'm grieving, but if you wanna leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there.
Good afternoon, evening, morning. I suppose it doesn't matter what time it is for us, because it could be any time for you. Welcome.
Jerry DePoto never sleeps. And so we never sleep.
Indeed. Welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is John Troopin. I am the deputy managing editor at Lookout Landing. I am joined by Kate Prusser, my friend and managing editor. And we are doing a quasi-emergency. This is like the, it's not 911. What's the one where you're supposed to dial?
411?
Like, yeah, 411. We're 411-ing. This is your 411 podcast on the Mariners rebuild. We've got a bunch of major moves this week and another set that we're pretty much expecting at this point to come sometime in the next week or two, and we wanted to have a little chat about it, and we'll have more to write, we'll have more to say in the weeks to come. But we Kate and Matthew Roberson, staff writer Matthew Roberson, had a podcast earlier this week before we knew the new details of the now seemingly all but assured trade with the Mets, and we wanted to get back in here and talk about what we think with some more details, some better details, some weirder details. So Kate, let's dive right into it. Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz, and it sounds like a shit ton of money. Uh-huh. It did sound like $60 million, and then it sounded like less, but maybe some money. And now, according to the most recent thing we've heard, which could be completely out of date by the time you're listening to this, probably sometime in the weekend, Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports has related that it sounds more like the dollars will be somewhere in the $20 million range, which is what we were initially thinking would make sense, would be a fair sort of
dollars. I mean, the monetary values in this have flipped, like, like it's been like Bitcoin, like just up and it's down and it's up and it's down. It's 60, it's 40, it's 80, it's 30, it's everything, it's nothing. And it's just, it's very whiplashy to try to follow along with.
I mean, Kate, you've lived on the East Coast. I've never lived on the East Coast. People talk a lot about, like, especially the New York media, but even just in general, the East Coast sort of media as being, you know, especially, I mean, you know, essentially when you go D.C. and north, you know, you're Boston, you're Philadelphia,
yeah.
You're New York, that it's a different environment than you get on the West Coast, that the West Coast is sort of a more chill environment.
This has
been madness. This has been, yeah, like, people stumbling over themselves to get a scoop that they're then just knocked over backwards trying to walk back. I mean, what, this has been just an absolutely ridiculous week of rumors that have
dissipated. A lot of this is the Mariners front office is famously tight-lipped. The Mets front office seems to be the opposite of that. Or at least the beat reporters, as you said, have some kind of, like, you know, extended Inspector Gadget type shit, extendo ears, Harry Potter bullshit, where they're standing outside of offices. I don't know what's going on, but they seem to know everything. We know some things, but
we got some info.
We got some things, no. But like in New York, it is a race to have the loudest voice, I think, and to be first, because it is such a competitive media environment. Like, there are just so many eyes, there are so many outlets, And so you want to kind of be on top. And I think we've seen, we didn't really have this with the Paxton deal, I think, because it like kind of came together quickly and happened quickly. Mm-hmm.
And also that deal, like, it made sense. And like everyone had kind of been talking about that deal in roughly the format that it came together in for months of like, if the Yankees are going to trade someone, it will be Justus Sheffield, their starting pitcher who probably will figure it out, but they don't want to spend the time figuring it out.
While they're in their window of contention. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and everyone knew the Mariners were going to move Paxton as soon as it became, the retooling, you know, has bled, reimagining has bled into retooling, has bled into like Jerry DePoto showing up at each of our houses and personally jackhammering around in like your living room and stuff. Like just, oh, your treasured childhood memories. Nope. Out. I'm trading those, trading those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that partially it's the New York media, but we didn't totally see that in the Paxton deal. Partially what we're seeing here, I think, is after declaring Edwin and Haniger and Marco Gonzalez were going to be part of the next core, unless he was blown away. Ah, you got to read the fine print with DePoto. You got to read the fine print.
Those trade wins, Kate. Those trade wins.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess blown away is either three top 100 prospects or two top 100 prospects, and we convince you to eat all of or a significant
million,
portion
right? Like
of 60 this.
60 million, essentially.
Yeah, half of, basically, right? It's half of what's owed to him.
Yeah, effectively. And so, I mean, if you are somehow listening to a podcast from us without knowing the details of the rumor deal is,
if
to
you're,
finish it up.
If you're listening to this from the space station, if you're aboard that little Mars rover that they just put out there.
You are in a draconian military state that allows podcast downloads, but not Twitter. Or the Seattle, and you've used all your free articles from the Seattle Times, and you don't know about incognito mode. Let's break some news for you. The Mets likely return. It seems almost impossible that the players involved are going to change at this point.
I don't
it's
think
possible.
So.
You don't think so? Okay.
I don't think so. And I have some intel that this is, as far as like what the people who are low enough in on the ladder to talk to someone like me knows, like this is, and you know, I mean,
oh,
stuff
you mean,
can
you
go,
mean it's not going to change. Not that you weren't refuting what I was saying.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
No, you're good. I just wanted to make sure. So yeah, the players involved are it's pretty set.
Yes, I mean that is okay. and I mean pretty set. You were dealing with maybe two of the more loose cannon GMs in the league with
true.
Jerry DePoto and Brody Van Wagenen, which I still refuse to believe is a real name. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, maybe I think that these are two dudes who are audacious and not afraid. Mm-hmm. And if one of them was like, what about Malik Smith? What about Malik Smith? I could just see them. The image I have is the two of them sitting like across a card table from each other with a bottle mm-hmm. of like not good liquor, like not a liquor that we would know, like something weird, like Rakı, the pure, basically.
Yeah. Rakı.
Rakı, Albanian Everclear is how I know that.
When I was in Turkey, I was scoffed at that anyone would drink anything less than Rakı.
Ooh, so. I used to teach Albanians and in the Albanian community, and when I went to someone's house, I was offered, I think as a joke, a little tiny shot glass of Rakı, and you know, I went to take it because I wanted to be polite.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, one of the moms came rushing over and she was like, no, 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 this is not for girls to drink. And I was like, well, I'm 24 and I'm going to do that. Oh man, just that one thing. I have never, lowered my mouth to a gasoline pump and then lit a match, but that's what that tasted like.
That's about right.
Yeah.
It is.
Anyway, that's what they're pounding shots of at their at their card table. They're just waiting to see who blinks first.
Like that scene in which of the Indiana Jones movies is it, where the woman is just out drinking, narrowly out drinking, just pounding shot for shot. So the Mets will be sending their first round pick from 2018, this year, the 8th overall pick in the draft, outfielder Jared Kelenic.
Kelenic? I think it's Kelenic. It's not like Kelonic. It's not like
I said Kelenic.
I know, but that's too close to Kelonic. It's Kelenic.
What does Kelonic mean? Is that something bad?
It's a colonic. It's like a colon. It's like an enema.
Oh, this similar.
Is, I mean, it's not. It's
having to do with the colon.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah. I mean, this is
anyway. Upper having to do with the Kellen.
Jared Kelenic, pride of Waukesha, Wisconsin. Waukesha, Wisconsin.
I'm going to hit you with Waukesha.
Waukesha? Is it really Waukesha? It
I'm
is
Waukesha. Sure it's Waukesha.
I think it is Waukesha. But I like Waukesha because you can get... that doesn't sound right. You're right. Waukesha. Waukesha, Wisconsin.
This is
taking
back some authority.
Yes, that's fair. I mean, yours is like a place name that could be made up, and mine is like an actual medical procedure. So I still think I have the upper hand on this.
Fair.
Yes, Jared is, I'm going to be very upfront and say I cannot be objective about this trade because he was my favorite prospect in the 2018 draft. And an outfielder, you know me, I love pitchers. Mm-hmm. I like catchers. I don't usually love an outfielder.
You're a hit tool, woman after your own hit. Tool.
You know, I love the hit tool.
And
I love the
hit and
tool.
Command.
I do, and that's Kelenic. He's a true five tool player. The question mark is on his power, but in a year, if you had to put a question mark on him, other than he's 19 and he's a prospect from a cold weather state, which was some general poo pooing that went on Twitter today. From some of the prospect wonks, there hasn't been a very good track record. And I was like, nah.
It's a dangerous profile, but
it
is.
It's extremely high risk. It's extremely high reward, though. And I just feel like I love everything about him. I love his makeup. He is a bulldog. We have this very funny conflicting stories about Jared where I fell in love with Jared at the perfect game All-American Classic in August of 2017. He was not one of the most highly hyped up guys. He was someone they talked about. He was someone they featured. But, you know, there was a lot of attention being paid to some of the big power pitchers and Nolan Gorman, the big power prospect who's just tearing things up. And Kelenic was sort of, you know, he's a question mark because he's from a cold weather state and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I just, you know, he made this amazing catch in the game. He battled really hard during his at-bats. He had a good feel for hitting, I think, a good sense of the strike zone. And then on top of all of that, he was, like, featured in some of these interviews, and he was just, like, a guy who clearly loves the game, but also kind of nice and like down to earth and
the Wisconsin nice.
He was, and I don't think he was an act or anything. It was like genuine Wisconsin nice. They were talking about like social media, and he kind of was talking to the other prospects, and he was like, I don't know how you guys were going to interact with me because, you know, you're big names and I've heard your name before and I didn't know if you'd be cool, but then you were really cool. And then there was like this moment where he was like, I just really look up to that and admire that. And there was this moment where everyone was like, ah, thanks, man. Like, that was nice of you to, it was just a cool moment. And he was kind of, it made me really like him. And then in his, when the Mets had the press conference and announced him, and one of the first things he said was like, oh, we went out for breakfast and I got two eggs and it was like $20. I can't believe the prices in New York. Like, aw. And I don't, it's homespun, but I don't think it's put on, you know? Like, he's very real. In his draft day video, he was talking about how he loves romantic movies, and he sang Demi Lovato. Like,
yeah, I mean, a relatable 19-year-old, huh?
Yeah. Like, how cool is that? I mean, someone who's, like, kind of not afraid to be himself, but anyway, that conflicted with your encounter. I was like, what a nice kid. What a, what a good person. Mm-hmm. And you're like, that was not my experience. Because we both kind of got interested in him then around the same time.
Yes.
Then he was being mocked to Seattle in some of the mock drafts. I know Keith Law had him going to us at 14 a bunch of times. So tell us about what you found in your reconnaissance of Jared Kelenic.
The majority of, I mean, I loved seeing Kelenic. He's really big for a high schooler. Like,
he is.
I mean, like,
he not, on that advanced nutrition shit that on, they got some of the other. Nutrition. Yeah.
You know, and like, he is, I think he's like slightly older for a high schooler.
He is.
One of the things they noted. So that, you know, like, you should take that, I guess, with a grain of salt. But like,
he trains with J.J. Watt. His dad built this like big indoor complex for people in cold weather kids to work out at, and J.J. Watt works out there, so he worked out alongside him, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, this kid is intense. He is serious about this. The quote that I found when I was looking this up, that, you know, it, like, I don't know that this necessarily personally endears me to someone, but definitely makes me think, oh, you have a lot of what you might find to be successful in professional sports. Mm-hmm. I think the quote here was, I don't like to lose. If I'm playing you in checkers or chess, I'm going to beat you. Bad. I'm going to bury you. That's something to take pride in. Just this last game, we're up by one. Do we really need one more run in the last inning? Well, I'm going to score because I want to bury you. you know, I mean, that is, you know, whatever that maybe, you know, it's bravado, it's a lot, but I, you know, it is the type of intensity that, you know, when you are playing professional baseball, I think we see a lot of people, you know, it's selection bias that a lot of the people who make it to the majors are these insanely intense people who are often very much, my life is baseball. I do
because minor league baseball sucks.
Yeah,
you get paid nothing. But blessings on his head. But good old Bo Branton, our Stanford grad draft pick this year, who originally had a job at Disney, got hit by a few pitches in Modesto this year and was like, "I'm out." He voluntarily retired after the season. Yeah. Like, one season of pro ball, good enough for me. I can now always say I did this and exit stage left. Yeah,
exactly. So I think Kelenic is obviously the centerpiece and legitimately worth being excited about. What did you want to say, Kate?
Just that before we move on from Kelenic and kind of part of what I want to say about this is, so obviously on draft day we watched him get taken, not at 14 by the Mariners, but at number 6 by the Mets, which was high. I thought he might go in like the 9 range, somewhere 8-9, like still not up to us, but I wasn't anticipating he would go quite as early because he did have like a little bit of a fall off. It was a particularly harsh winter that year, and he was just a little slow getting back. So I thought scouts might ding him, but they did not. And the Mets apparently just loved him. So, but that's the kind of prospect that, like, because the Mariners have, for basically since the advent of Cano, been not good enough, but also not quite bad enough to really pick in that elite talent, like the 1-5, 1-8 even range, they just haven't had those draft picks. And so we haven't had these kinds of guys who, okay, may or may not, like the return rate on first round prospects is shockingly low. Like, after you get past first overall, second overall, it drops off precipitously. Yeah,
there's a very steep, I mean, you can even just track it just purely by statistics. I mean, it is a mm-hmm. steep curve.
Yeah. So I'm not even saying that I have personal, very strong feelings about the possibility for Kelenic to be successful.
Yeah.
But just as far as, like, having a prospect like this in the system, it's something Mariners fans won't have had since, like, the Ackley days. Not to raise very... You know, I mean, we're talking 2011?
2011, 2012, 2013. I mean, that was all time of, like, the thing to be excited about is in Jackson or is in Tacoma or is in, you know... further away. I mean, that was the time of
rookie ball,
you know, Cerberus, you know, I mean, it was the time of Hultson, Paxton, Walker, you know, it was the time of Montero and, you know,
DJ Peterson,
Smoke, even I mean, DJ Peterson even later, but like still that same, you know, that same era of the prospects are upcoming and going to continue bolstering, as opposed to everything is here now. And, you know, it just wasn't enough. What was there now didn't end up being enough. And it was close. It was close multiple times, and it just didn't end up being the case.
No. You know? So, I mean, what the Mariners have basically done in this deal is buy themselves an extra first-round draft pick, which, in a lot of ways, I think makes up for those years where you finished and you picked at, like, 15 and at 20 and at 18, because they were always, like, not quite as pathetic as a lot of the other teams, but certainly... not bringing us anywhere close to a playoff berth. You know, 2014, we were close in 2016. That's what I'm thinking of. 2016. Anyway, you know what I mean. Like, it's just been...
Both were close.
It's been years of getting close but no cigar. And now it's like, okay, we're going to well and truly just suck here for a while. So the farm is going to get... We're going to sell everything off. The farm is going to leap... I think it's already leapt out of last place up to, like, mid-20s, would you say?
Yeah, I would say mid-20s right
now. Mid-20s, I think, is fair, just with the Paxton trade, the Zunino trade. This is going to vault it ahead again, I think, to, like... I don't think it would be overstating it to put it in the high teens.
Yeah, I'd say mid-teens.
Maybe. Oh, I wouldn't say mid-teens, because I think they were saying... We would have to then do a Haniger trade in order to get up to...
You meant, like, closer to the 20s, not,
I mean, closer... Yes, I think after this goes through, we'll be high teens. And then going on further from there, it's going to be, you know, hopefully just inching closer and closer out. Not that prospect rankings and farm system rankings are be-all, end-all. They certainly are not. But, boy, it's going to be a pleasant surprise not to be, like, the system everyone dreads writing about.
Yeah.
And everyone has to, we're going to use a good place, why did I make you meme to begin this? You know, everyone's trying to find their funny little entree to talk about how much we suck. That gets really tiring. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really nice to be on the other end of that for a while.
Yes.
And Kelenic is the kind of prospect that we haven't had a top 100 since Tyler O'Neill, right?
I guess, was Neidert or O'Neill traded less recently?
Neidert was traded after O'Neill, but I don't know. Yeah,
I mean, Neidert, I think, like, he wasn't, I think he would have been at the end of year.
Yeah.
He was traded.
Neidert, annoyingly, also went to the Rays, Marlins. Yeah, and kind of blossomed. So that's fun too. That's fun. Fun and good. Anyway, so obviously Kelenic is your headliner in this trade. Uh-huh. But a man does not live by a toolsy high school outfield prospect alone.
Uh-huh.
At least not when you were giving up baseball's best closer. So what else is coming back?
Well, we are getting a pitcher, right-handed pitcher in the form of a guy named Justin Dunn. Justin Dunn is a rather exciting right-handed pitcher who was a first-round pick in 2016. He has three different, I would say, above-average pitches, usually, well, depending on how you categorize a fastball, but four-seam fastball and a two-seam fastball, or I guess more of a sinker, and then a good slider and a changeup that took a ton of a big step forward this past year.
Which is very exciting. Who,
yes, I mean, it's the sort of separating factor in between him being a guy who a lot of people pegged as ultimately being sort of a Sergio Romo, extremely dominant against righties reliever, but limited because of only
terrible platoon
exactly
and terrible platoon splits. Too,
yes,
right?
And sort of shifting now towards having decent numbers in Double A in his first, you know, in sort of half a year after getting promoted, and he's 23, so a lot of folks pegging him for number three to number four starter, which, you know, I mean, that's essentially what you, if you want to think of that, that's sort of Marco Gonzalez is a good number three starter, you know, so you want a if you have a batch of pitchers like Marco Gonzalez, you know, you can go really far, especially if you have a good offense and good position players.
Now,
so
John, I read a comment on our very own site that claimed that Marco Gonzalez is a three for the Mariners. I think he's actually probably a two, but he would be a five in another system. I feel like that is
I mean,
inaccurate, unless that's the Mets rotation, maybe?
I think he would be a number five for the Astros. He would be a number five
for
the
Astros as they were last year, right? Like,
yes.
Before the departures in free agency.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Marco Gonzalez was one of the 25 best pitchers, starting pitchers in baseball this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, he could be the number one for some teams. He's going to be the number one for the Mariners, unfortunately.
Yes.
But, you know, but in terms of what you would expect production-wise, you know, and that continues to change as...
Right,
as
the platonic ideal of a number three starter...
Yes.
...in a
yes.
not-too-good system or not-too-bad system is Marco Gonzalez. At least it's 2018 Marco Gonzalez. Who knows?
Indeed.
Who knows what a Marco Gonzalez without Mike Zunino catching him looks like? But
indeed.
That's a question for a different day.
We'll see.
Or at least
indeed.
A different part of this podcast.
Indeed. So...
Back to Justin Dunn, sorry.
So, I mean, Dunn is, you know, he's not a headliner, but he's clearly a player who could very easily develop into, you know, an above average major leaguer, and the potential is there. I mean, he's a worthwhile player. He's sort of what you would call a top 200 guy and maybe fringe top 100. And the closer he gets, someone who will get into the top 100 on proximity, but still, you know, still very, very useful.
Which the Mets pushed him to Double A this year after he repeated High A for the first part of the season, 45 innings at High A, and then another 90 at Double A, where his numbers don't look great. Primarily, the strikeouts are still there, which is a really, I think, encouraging sign.
Yes.
You know, the ERA obviously
and the
blows up some.
Up.
Yeah. I think I've seen a little bit of a trend in some of the Mets pitching that we've looked at, and another piece of this podcast that we'll have to talk about another piece of this return, which means I have to figure out how to say his name. Gerson Bautista? Gerson? Like person?
I have heard Gerson.
Gerson.
That is what the Mets
Gerson.
Minor league announcers said.
Alright, so Gerson.
So they are beyond
should that. Not have been at the major league level this year. Should not.
Ooh.
Should not. 23 years old, no control. Anyway, we'll get to him. But I have noticed the Mets are pretty aggressive with some of their pitching prospects. I don't think in our system on this particular timeline, Justin Dunn pitches in AA this year, but So I wouldn't judge him too harshly by those AA numbers is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and like most, I think a lot of it is pretty positive. Like, I mean, like you said, like, I mean, like, you're a starting pitcher who threw basically 90 innings and had over 10 strikeouts per nine, had a nearly 28% K rate. Like,
that's really
very
good.
Strong. And the issues he ran into were that he's, I think, had some issues with pitching with runners on base, which is not, has not always been his strength, and so it'll be interesting, certainly, to see if that persists. I hope it does not, obviously, but and hopefully that's something he can iron out in AA or in AAA this year. I guess he would start in AA and then probably move up to Tacoma. There's just no rush to get him higher.
Nope.
But
Say put him where you have your best pitching coach, or the pitching coach he gets along with the best.
So I think basically, because we can sort of tie a little bit of a bow on this, and then move towards the other trade, and then some questions. This deal lends itself towards guys who will be in the Mariners. Will really work in the Mariners' window, and will also, have significant potential to do big things, but are going to take a while.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what we're here for. It's kind of what we're here for. And like I said this with Justus Sheffield. Mm-hmm. I will say this with Justin Dunn, who I think. I think command-wise is more polished than Justus. I think it's important to remember that Justin Dunn went to college. He is a Boston College Eagle. So we now have two of those in the system. We have him and Johnny Adams. Mm-hmm. But, so Justin Dunn was born in 1995.
Yeah.
I know. And Justus, this is going to be so fun as the prospects get younger and younger and I get older and older.
Glennick isn't born in the 2000s. So that's narrowly, you're narrowly dodging that.
Justice, we're the same age. Justice is born 1996.
Might as well be to Jared
Glennick. I mean, yeah, we're both. I would be so excited for you to talk to one of these guys and have them regard you as an old. It would really just brighten my day. Okay, so Justin Dunn is born 1995. Justus is born 1996. Obviously, we've seen a lot more of Justus Sheffield, but he doesn't have college. Like, he has the bonus of being developed by the Yankees for the last couple of years, but he's still a project. He's a project. Mm-hmm. Dunn, I think, is less of a project. And then this third piece that they got, nobody else likes. But I'm sorry, he throws triple digits. Mm-hmm. He just can't control it at all, even a little bit. And this is the piece that hasn't totally been confirmed yet, but it's, I'm going to make another go at his name, Jerson, with a G, obviously. Indeed. Jerson Bautista.
It's good. Somebody's got a G.
Mm-hmm. 23-year-old reliever, right-handed reliever. Out of the Dominican, right? Mm-hmm. Signed as an international free agent. Mm-hmm. Who looks like Edwin Diaz wearing a poor Edwin Diaz disguise. Just sort of like longer and blonder hair and like a bad goatee sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And looks like has Edwin's body type and throws kind of Edwin-y with a lot
it
of...
It doesn't have the movement, but it has the velocity, and I think the issue with Jerson has always just been that it's not... The command is
the
not
command.
There.
She's people not there. Because
swing and miss, because it's 100, but it's, it's tough.
But he had a particularly punishing home run rate, didn't he? Did he not?
He did, yeah. And I don't think, like, you don't need to really worry about the major league numbers in terms of, like, what you're seeing from Gerson. But yeah, he's not nothing. He's not a complete.
No, he's not. But when it was announced in the Slack, there was much sort of, I believe Connor said that he felt like he wanted to vomit.
well, and I think part of that is, right, like what we were comparing it to. Right?
Yes,
like,
because all you fools thought they were going to give up, what's his face, McNeil. God, he has a boring name. Jeff McNeil.
His name is Jeff.
Jeff McNeil. Can you have a more boring white man prospect name than that? Jeff McNeil, yes. The most generic creative player name ever. Jeff McNeil, who is, I think, probably kind of important to what the Mets want to do this year. And sure. Of all the Mets fans, I was surprised by the amount of prospect hugging that there was. And not so surprised about Kalanick because, you know, obviously I love him. But yeah, there was some intense huggery. And McNeil was very, very hugged. And I was like, I don't think we're going to get both these guys. I just didn't see a deal where, like, they gave up both those players and Mets fans didn't just run down to Citi Field and light it on fire. So I never had that expectation, which, like, when McNeil was dropped out of it, it sort of didn't really change my feeling on the needle. Sure. I do wish that they could maybe get something a little bit better than something that is an extreme project. Like, he's just such a project. These numbers at every level are just a terrible project. Okay, he doesn't have a huge homer problem. He just has an extremely bad walk problem.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere, all the time, with everything. Like, has never had lower than like a 3-something in any significant stay. So, woof, that's bad.
Yeah.
But there's, I mean, if you have that raw stuff, like, look how much they tried to do with Thiago, and he's still hanging on in there in the White Sox system, you know?
If you throw 100 and you can figure it out eventually, I mean, you will have a long career. It depends on if you figure it out. And it's, you know, it's the kind of profile it's worth taking a risk on. Like, they have the time to let him try and figure it out. Like, why, you know.
They have the resources. So, they've got DeLunas and his, you know, special magic pitcher box that he puts the pitchers in. And, jiggles the handles on them and come out fixed. So, I mean, I don't hate it as a big upside play. I wish that there was something with a nice, safe, like, back-of-the-rotation starter. Like, where is my nice, safe? I'm so tired of writing up people and being like, well, if he figures it out, he's a front line. But if he doesn't, he's a reliever. I just can't, please. I never thought I would be begging for, like, a safe high floor from Jerry DePoto. That's what I'm begging for now. We have overcorrected so far in the other direction. But I think Gerson is more interesting than a lot of people are. I would say that I am higher on him than most people in general, just because, you know, it's kind of fun to look at a intriguing lump of clay and be like, well, what can they, maybe they can do something with it. But that does kind of come back to, is this return enough? Is this return what we would get aside from all the money changing hands? You know, are these three prospects enough to prize away Edwin Diaz?
It's hard to say, right? I mean, the idea is that you would be able to, like, the idea was that Edwin would be enough to really kickstart a rebuild. And I don't know if that was ever true. Maybe that just was a pipe dream and there was never going to be a market for it. But, you know, it felt like, at the very least, that Edwin could bring back two top 100 people and a little bit more. And in a sense, I mean, that's
right.
What you're getting in this deal, and you're getting rid of Robinson Cano's, some of Robinson Cano's contract.
Yes.
But I guess the issue is then, if you could have done that, maybe you could have done more. Like, that's really what we're left with is, like, could the Mariners have gotten more if they had been willing to eat more money on Cano and then pair, just, you know, either, like, pair Gene Segura and, Edwin Diaz, or just send Edwin Diaz out himself. So that's, you know, it's so tough because it's just going to linger on one way or another. But it's just like, this is the frustrating part about rebuilds, and it is the frustrating part about seeing players with so much talent, and especially for you and I and for everyone at the site, like, we spend a lot of time trying to get a sense of all the possibilities because we don't want to be caught, you know, off guard
mm-hmm.
by something and not have something worthwhile to write up and share. But it means that a lot of the time you'll really get a strong sense of what you think would make sense or what you want to have happen, and you're not, by and large, going to get that to happen. So I do think, at least for you and I, who both loved Kelenic, you know, it's not ideal. It's a bummer to see that you're losing Diaz, and the best thing that you're getting back is a couple solid prospects, one of whom could really have superstar potential, and most of all, just getting rid of money that hopefully will then be reinvested the next time the Mariners are competitive. But
yes,
I mean, it is the end of the era of the Mariners trying to compete with this unbelievably exciting and recognizable core.
It is. And I think that because by now, with every return, we've been like, does that feel like enough for Paxton? That doesn't feel like enough for Paxton. Does that feel like enough for Diaz? That doesn't feel... Because there are guys, to an extent, and, you know, is anything ever really going to feel like enough? I mean, and honestly, if it feels like enough, the other team is probably giving too much, and it's a bad trade scenario. Any trade scenario should be a little bit painful for both sides, and... I think you're seeing that hilariously with two of the more melodramatic fan bases in the Mariners and Mets. You know, the Mariners, you have just years of complete downtrodden people who are just used to everything going badly for them all the time, because it has. And then with the Mets, you have a recent history of success that is not so much fading into the rear view as, like, Mets fans are hopped like a bullet train and are speeding away from it, like, with just the general confidence of the feeling of, like, the Wilpons, or as I've seen them called, the Coupons, which I thought was clever.
that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, well, that's and, Mets I mean, fans, like, they got a lot of time to do that kind of stuff.
That's fair. Well, and, like, I mean, what would you think if your team made the World Series in 2015? And then, missed the playoffs every year since, and has looked increasingly out of kilter, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have the Cy Young Warner. They Felixed Jacob DeGrom, like.
Yeah.
In a way, I think Mariners fans are uniquely positioned to understand the suffering of Mets fans. So. Maybe, and I'm telling this to myself as much as anyone, we should be take it easy on them when they get very screamy on the Twitter box. they're processing a lot. They're going through a lot. I think the other thing that kind of positions the Mets uniquely is they're looking at the Braves start to pull away. I mean, the Braves already pulled away, but they're trying to see what they can do to keep a little bit competitive with them before the Braves and their, like, super soldier farm system just march up and down the NL East and blast away everything in its path for a while. Because I think that's where we're headed eventually, right? Like, all the Braves are going to come up and they're just going to destroy everything. And Acuna is going to be like a, an all-star every year. And, Tuki Toussaint and, gosh, who else? Kyle Wright, who I don't know that you're going to be able to prize him away for anything. I mean, Max Fried, who would be our number two starter, probably. It was a reliever for them this year. Like, that's how ridiculously loaded their system is. So I understand this from, I think a lot of people, a lot of comments I've seen have been like, LOL Mets, what are you doing? I see what they're doing. Like, they're, as you pointed out, Robinson Cano, who is largely being discussed like he is a tire someone found on the side of the road. Oh my God, what am I going to do with this piece of garbage we have to haul around? It's like, that's not a tire. Like, that tire is attached to a pretty nifty little scooter that would have zoomed to the front of your player, your position player FWAR this year, friends. Prorated over an entire seat. I mean, you know, it's just, it's bizarre. I know that the contract is bad. I know the back end of the contract is bad. But we've watched Robinson Cano for 5 years. We've watched him defy the odds. Like, we've watched the kind of work that he puts in. We've watched how he, you know, Cano dogging up the line. We've watched how careful Cano is with his body so that he can keep going out there and being a productive player. So I just, I thought that was bizarre, but it is, it's a way to get the Mets much better very quickly, I think, for the next year, if not 2 years, if not maybe 3 years.
It makes sense. I think it's risky for both sides, but it makes sense for both sides, especially if the money ends up being in that 20 to 30 range.
Right. So. And what we need to say now is that we heard about this deal on Friday morning. We spent all day sweating it out. No, Thursday morning. We spent all day sweating it out. Today, I woke up fully expecting to see the deal done. Here it is, Friday night in Seattle. Nothing has happened. There was a point where I was like, ooh, is this falling apart? I don't know. And, you know, you can't tell from what the beat writers are saying because they're all saying 17 different things. But one thing that was interesting, and Tim, staff writer Tim Cantu, pointed this out, was that right about the time where someone tweeted the talks had slowed down, this Phillies interested in Segura Diaz thing came out. And I was like, ooh, odd timing on that. A little pressure being applied to the Mets. Because honestly, the Mets, the Braves, the Phillies, not a one of them is perfect. All of them could use some combination of the players that the Mariners have to offer. And I love Kelenic. I want Kelenic more than anything else, obviously. But I love the idea of, like, just kind of playing them against each other and being like, oh, are you going to let Philly get away with this? You really want to finish third in the division this year? So I'm all for, like, play them against each other a little. See if you can get some of that money talked down or another prospect thrown in or, you know, just use it to put pressure to get the deal done. Because at this point, I just want it to be over, honestly.
Yeah. Well, one deal, we're going to bounce to questions here. Because
we've got a lot of questions.
But, we got questions.
We got questions? Oh, thank you. Thank you, listeners, for giving us questions.
Yeah, it was very nice.
I can't believe we got questions. We were both convinced we were not going to get a single question. And I was like, well, I'll tweet it out just in case.
I would not have rambled
for so long if I knew we had questions. Why didn't you tell me we had questions?
Well, I didn't want to interrupt you. You were on a roll. And we can bust through a couple of these pretty quickly. First question from Matt Sims at Matt_360.
I'm sorry. Were we going to talk about the Colome deal?
Oh, well, yes. I think we'll talk about that in the questions here.
Okay, all right.
We
perfect.
Got a question about that. So.
Well, then just cut all of that out.
From Matt Sims, any chatter on a Seager trade? We pretty much have not heard anything about any moves regarding Kyle Seager. We heard that, I'm sure the Mariners have talked to teams about it, but there's not a great fit for him. The only places that really, I mean, a team that would be taking him would be a team that's trying to win now, and that would typically be teams without third basemen already, and there aren't many of those. So you're looking at maybe the Cardinals, maybe the Phillies, and either of those teams, you could just as easily trade. You know, they might just as easily, at very least, want to see how the Manny Machado market sort of shakes out, how Mike Moustakas's market shakes out. So I think the Mariners keep Seager for a little bit. Are you in agreement on that, at least for this year?
I am on
see him perform better.
I mean, I don't know. If, like, somebody pounces on Machado and, like, let's say it's the Phillies, and then the Braves are like, wait, what do we have going on at third base? What do the Braves have going on at third base? Who's the third baseman for the Atlanta
Braves?
Mikel
Franco. Oh. Has been real rough.
Yeah, that's rough. That's rough. I mean, that's... Yeah, I mean, that's not a, now that I think about it, a terrible fit. And again, I would want to see Seattle just munch, eat up Seager's contract.
Get in that tasty
Yes, and get us some real prospects back. But who knows, they might treat it as a salary dump, which I think is the most disheartening part of some of these moves, is just seeing... I mean, it'll remain to be seen, and it's tough with the potential Diaz-Cano trade, because we won't know that they will in good faith reinvest that money in the team until several years down the line. But I mean, shedding money is such a kind of yucky look.
Yeah,
being cheap is a yucky look.
It's an unpleasant one from a fan's perspective.
So yeah, I don't know who is going to be playing for the Mariners in 2019. I think this new catcher, Omar Narváez. We're gonna call him Narvi. Narváez. That is a name that you can, especially because we also have Dean Navarez, who is also a catcher.
Yes, we had the same thought, which tells me that you and I spent running the same
prospecty circles. Dean Navarez has some, what is the proper term for very large forearms? You call them like cables? I don't want to call them anything that's like poop sounding. Like logs? Why are they? They're all gross.
No,
I don't. We need
pipe.
Those. That's terrible. Yeah. Yeah, maybe pipes. Is it? Mm-hmm. But they all sound terrible.
No, pipes is not pipes. Don't go pipes.
No. Okay. All right. Oh no! I should not. That Matthew posting that Twitter the DM slide just popped into my brain. Nope. Anyway, Kelenic also has some very big forearms, and this was my favorite Twitter interaction.
That's where you get the speed
from the forearm.
That speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wrist flick.
I mean, for 19 or whatever, they are huge. And I had posted a picture of it, and somebody was like, "Ooh, you gotta call a doctor to look at those arms because they are pretty veiny." And this nurse was like, "I want to put an IV in them." And I was like, I guess when you're a nurse, that's how you look at everyone. Like, she was like, gorgeous veins. And I was like, that's cool. It's weird to me, but it's also cool.
It's 100% very
strange. It's very
strange, I'm going to say.
To look at a picture of a prospect and be like,
wildly uncomfortable.
I want to stick an IV in them. Like, but, you know, nurse, I'm sure that this is something that nurses understand, especially. Right. As somebody with tiny little baby spaghetti neat veins that are hard to find. So, anyway, way back to ticket prices. Mariners should be paying us to go to games in 2019. End of rant. I can't remember what I was talking about.
That's okay. We got more questions.
Okay.
we'll go to, I'm going to just, For time's sake, we're going to answer some of the questions, not all the questions, but I do want to touch on one. We have a question from Josh Barnard at Barndoggy on Twitter.
Hi, Josh.
Josh has a great question that I think we are going to touch on future podcasts.
Okay.
but not go quite as in-depth on this reaction one. But the question is great, and so I want us to just have it in mind, but just how rebuilds work and what rebuilds have worked and have not worked for other teams.
Ooh. That
we're sort of
that is a good series of articles, actually, because I feel like that's something we should really dive into.
Yes, because we're really in the early stages here, obviously, of what probably is going to be a pretty sizable rebuild here, and instead, it doesn't always work, obviously. It is I mean, this is sort of how it all starts typically, as teams get rid of the best players they have and get players who are further away from the play. And, you know, if you trade one good player who is for sure a good major leaguer, you should get a couple players who are maybe good major leaguers but are further away. And so that is what you're seeing now. You know, you're seeing players like Edwin and players like Colomé and players like Paxton, who we're confident are good players, dealt away for a number of guys who maybe will be something.
Right.
So, yeah. But we're going to go to our next question. Let's see. Let's go with Tim Ainley at Bravo Tim on Twitter. They traded Edwin Diaz, even though they said that'd be a long shot. Specifically, they said they'd have to be blown away.
The Jerry DePoto fine print.
Do we think that they would be looking to trade Mitch Haniger now, too?
100%. Yeah. Haniger's gone. Sorry.
You think Haniger's gone?
I think Haniger's gone.
Wow.
Oh, I think Haniger is gone. I mean... Because I was I roughed out like what 2021, 2022 might look like. And Haniger in 2022, let's say, is what? ARB2? ARB3?
2022, I think he's ARB2.
ARB2.
Oh, no, 2022, I think, is his final year. Because I think he's a free agent.
Okay. I mean... And again, like, it's not so much that, but it is also the fact that he was older when he started and kind of broke out. So you're looking at, is Haniger going to be able to increase his production or maintain his production, especially as his defense maybe starts to slow down a little bit, loses some speed in that outfield that makes him so valuable. And it's just on a team. And the other thing is the team that I have kind of roughed out is just loaded with outfield prospects.
Yeah.
So we've got, and this is just off the top of my head, we have Julio, who I think is probably a left fielder.
Yeah.
We have Kyle Lewis.
Yeah, he could be a right fielder.
Kalanick, I don't know.
Kalanick
he's a
is
corner,
be,
I think.
He probably ends up as a corner.
Yeah.
He's got like okay outfield stuff, center field stuff right now, and I think he plays. He think he mixes in center field in the minors, but
I think he's a major league corner outfielder, like kind of along the same lines as Mitch, actually, where he could he has the defensive, and Kalanick has a cannon for an arm. At the perfect game, he was clocked at 96. Throwing out of the outfield. So, and I think that that gets better as he gets older, too. So, but to me, that's the plus arm, but the slower speed. He's a corner outfielder. You could play him in center if you needed to, but you don't need to because you have Josh Storrs. You have maybe Kyle Lewis. You have Keegan McGovern. You have Jake Fraley. You have Dom Thompson-Williams. You have Braden Bichette. Like, they're lousy with outfield prospects. Which is great because, you know, obviously not all of those guys are going to hit. Not all of them are going to be able to play center field, et cetera, et cetera. I'm highest on the corners, really, in that with J-Rod and Kalanick. But it's just that's a position of some real depth in the farm now, especially if the Kelenic trade goes through. So I just don't see the need for Haniger. Where we do have a problem is the infield, which has, by my count, Cal Raleigh, Evan White.
Not even. I mean, that's, that's a catcher.
Yeah. See, okay.
Maybe.
No. He's a catcher. I'm counting him with the infielders. Give me a break. Sure. I don't want to do a separate one for catchers. We have Cal Raleigh. We have Evan White. And then I have a bunch of question marks. I have Noel V, question mark. Noel V. Marte. And
who has not yet played a game for the Seattle Mariners organization.
Nope. I have Juan Caracuto, who is also even more question marky than Noel V. Has not developed as far. Has a better shortstop prospect, I think, but also is more error-prone. We have Bobby Honeyman, who kind of tore up the Northwest League, but big questions about whether or not he's a prospect. We have Joe Rizzo, who... didn't have a great season at High A this year. Nope. Second base, I just have a big circle with a question mark inside it. Because I have literally nothing. Chris Mariscal? I mean, he's going to be like 29 by the time this... He's already kind of old for the level. I'm hoping Chris Mariscal, like... finds his way to Seattle this year and he gets a little bit of major league playing time since we're not trying anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Promote the kid. But yeah, it's so obviously the infield and then, you know, we have all the pitching and there's a lot of, they're starting to stock up some interesting arms. You have Sam Carlson coming back at some point. Logan Gilbert, obviously. Justice, Swanson, Dunn, hopefully. The place that's the weakest is the infield. I would like to see them move Haniger and get something resembling an infield. I'd like to see them move Malix, too. I'm so sorry, Malix. I am so sorry. But, yeah, I would like to see Malix moved and just get me some of them infield prospects. I just... Why make them stick around? You know, why make them stick around? That's go fair. Bottom out in 2019 and 2020 and just start developing for 2021 and 2022 when I think the team is actually going to be pretty good.
Yeah, fair
enough. It's going to suck. It's going to suck to lose Haniger.
It's going
to
be rough.
it's going to make the team pretty much unwatchable. But for Mitch's own good, I would like to see him go someplace where, you know... I don't think it's a bad fit for him to go to the Mets. The Mets don't have a very good outfield. Malik's to the Mets, actually. I was really hoping that would be part of the deal. They don't have a center fielder. Like, they have a hurt Yoenis Cespedes, a formerly hurt Michael Conforto, and Brandon Nimmo. That's their outfield. Like, maybe there are some other guys I'm missing in there. But, yeah, Malik's would slot in. And the Mets fans wanted Malik so bad. So I would have loved to have tried to prize out an extra prospect with that. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it makes no sense to keep anything on the roster right now. I'd trade Marco if we could, but I don't know. It would be sad.
There would be something. You do eventually need someone
to pitch. Whatever, Wade LeBlanc. 200 innings. Let's go. I am totally a fan of, if you're going to tank hard. Get rid of everything. Get as much as you can for it.
Yeah.
And let those players go play in places that are not, how we say, hellholes. Not to put too fine a point on it. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Haniger is your boy, but I also knew you're a rational person. What's your feeling?
It'd make me very sad. It'd make me very sad, but I mean, it's really more about what there is, what's available, right? I mean, that's what it comes
right.
down
I don't
to
want to trade Haniger just to trade Haniger, by the way, like, just to be clear. Like, it would have to be a prospect haul that, again, would be in the blowing one away. But it's kind of hard. You bluff that. You said we would have to be blown away, and then the first domino fell, and so now your disguise is shot, right? Like, so in a way, I kind of feel like that devalues Haniger even because now they know that you're going to be trying to move him. the best thing you can do, I think, is try to get two teams that just both want him and make them bid against just each other.
Send them against them.
Exactly. Cage match. And we'll put that on TV, and it'll probably be more entertaining than the 2019 Mariners. Let's be real.
Yeah. All right. So, let's see. We'll go just a couple more questions here. We have we had a question about dealing Haniger from Durs, so that's good. We've covered that. Let's go with this question from Moose Jaw at Moose_Jaw26.
Moose Jaw.
What is the difference between the Mariners now and the Marlins last year? It's not likely your favorite question. Here, but
no home run sculpture?
No home run sculpture, for sure.
Beautiful park versus enclosed Floridian cesspool?
Yeah. It's a pretty reasonable tie together. I think the Mariners have better infrastructure historically, which is like for relatively, it is not saying much, but there's at least a decent infrastructure for development, and I think the Mariners, pending what we see from this really weird trade that's coming down the line, I think we probably are going to be more excited about the return than I think Marlins fans were about the return for Stanton, and certainly for Yelich.
Yes, for sure. I think that's an absolutely fair comp. Like.
Which isn't even to say, like, Yelich probably is comparable to Haniger in terms of value, but just in terms of what they're getting back, like, it's not a, I mean, obviously we haven't traded Haniger, but, like, already what we're seeing rumored, I think there's more to dream on, I guess, than what the Mariners are seeing, so. That is encouraging.
I will say, and like, maybe if Giancarlo Stanton had been packaged with something else, and it wasn't just a pure money dump, actual prospects would have come into the Marlins, and that deal wouldn't have been so widely panned across baseball. So, DePoto is getting some flack for attaching Edwin Diaz in this deal, but other than that, it's the same thing as, like, and, I mean, different, I guess, because Cano isn't perceived to have as much value as Stanton.
Right.
But strictly in terms of the contracts. I also think that, so Victor Mesa, obviously the Victors made a huge splash in free agency signing this year. You know, the Marlins are seemingly getting things on the right track. They're rebranding. They got rid of the home run sculpture, which I know hurt a lot of people in baseball, including me. It was so wonderful. Mm. So tacky. but they are, like, positioning themselves as a different team, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that Julio Rodriguez or Noel V. Marte or Juan Caracuto are getting the kind of respect put on their name that, like, the Mesas did. Because for some reason, Cuban prospects are always just get talked about more. I don't know why. Maybe because of how the Dominican operates. I don't know, but I think that those are three guys that just haven't been talked about very much in the Mariners system. It's an intriguing and exciting step into international free agency, because as John pointed out the other day, the last Mariner signed as a free agent who debuted was.
It was the last at all was Thiago Vieira,
right? Okay, Thiago.
The last
position player
was Ketel Marte.
Yeah. who, you know, netted a nice, helped us net a nice return in the Hanagura deal, but, yeah, they don't have a great track record there, so it'll be exciting to start to see some of that. Anyway, I mean, I think the Marlins are a better organization than they were even a year ago. I think they've pulled themselves out of things somewhat. Maybe they're a little ahead of the Mariners in the rebuilding process, so you could look at the kinds of stuff they're doing. There's definitely excitement building around the team. I think the rebrand is fun. I would not be opposed to a Mariners rebrand. You know, get some new caps in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fair question.
Else is being thrown out.
So right. Why don't we just start over? Let Julio design the caps. Kids got style.
I'm up for that. Well, Kate, do you have anything else you wanna touch on before we head out?
No, I just checked the.
I think there's a lot that there's a lot yeah. we will address for sure. So we appreciate all the questions, and don't worry, we are looking at them. We probably will just toss them in for next week. Goodness knows there's plenty to talk
about. Yeah, and some of these are straight up like article ideas, like our friend James Roberts, Junkball Pitchin, says, forgetting the unpredictable nature of Cherry for a moment, if you reset to the beginning of the offseason, how would you have conducted a rebuild tear down? I think that's probably going to be the basis of our offseason plan this year, because obviously we're not recommending they go out and sign a bunch of free agents. Thank you. How long does Jerry give you until the next reaction pod? Technically, we didn't even talk about the Colome trade that we were supposed to talk about.
Barely.
Suizo. Yeah. So, we'll table some of these and talk about them next time. Again, thank you guys for sending them in. And we're going to try to be podcasting a little more. I know that we took a long hiatus, but got some extra help on sending them out. So, during the long and cold and dark days of the off season, it is a little fun to dream on, if not this upcoming season of baseball, what the team might look like a few years down the road, because it's something we haven't gotten to do, certainly not in my tenure of being at Lookout Landing and getting to follow prospects pretty closely. So I'm excited.
Yeah. It's going to be a chance for us to do a lot of new stuff, and I think we're going to certainly, I know I'm going to do my best to try and get to some games, even maybe some West Virginia Power games.
It's going to be cool.
So, yeah, it's going to be a new wild world out there. So we hope you guys will be able to get into it with us. All right. Well, thank you for joining us for the podcast, and we'll probably talk to you next week when Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz are likely New York Mets.
And the next deal is brewing.
We're on to Gene Segura. Where will Gene Segura be? Probably the Phillies. We don't know. All right. Have a good night, y'all. Flashing lights.